Face-to-Face Games proudly presents Grand Prix Toronto, the first Grand Prix featuring the Hour of Devastation Limited format, July 21st to 23rd. Come face pro players as they flex their muscles just 1 week before the Pro Tour. Every Grand Prix entry includes a sleep-in special and registered sealed pool for players with buys. Visit gptoronto2017.facetofacegames.com to register and learn more.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
It's time to get out.
Like literally right now I'm sitting here and I'm like it's just dawning. Well, it's not just dawning on me, but you know that like that nervous energy
that's yeah, just where like you're like, yo, this like, is real.
Did you actually do everything you need to do? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I did a lot of things, but then I'm like, oh, I really haven't done everything.
Oh man.
Oh my god.
Maddie, I worked last night.
I haven't stopped working.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just so crazy. Our schedules are so different.
I
wake up at like 7:30 in the morning. I mean, I didn't go to bed until 2 because I didn't leave work until like 12:30. And then you're like, "Hurry up! We need to like get this done." And I'm like, "Oh my god! I just need some beauty sleep. I just need to look beautiful for no one on this podcast that we have no video for. You should see me right now. I'm a train wreck.
Dude, what are you talking about? I wake up with kids who wake me up at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, what time do your kids go to bed?
9 o'clock?
But yeah, then I'm like right so after nice. Them.
Because I know. I'm dead.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Dude, I'm out of gas. Like, as you get older, I realize this. I used to look at old men, I'm like, why the hell are you up at 5 o'clock in the morning? And, like, you go to bed at 3 in the afternoon. And I used to joke, like, with my wife. Like, isn't that hilarious? And, like, I swear to God, every year I get older, I'm like, you know, 10 minutes earlier, I could just go to bed. Like, I love sleep.
And you're getting up at the same time, right? It's just adding 10 minutes of sleep. Like, every year is 10 more minutes. So, like, you you are, like much, much older than me. So
audience, I'm much, much older. Hashtag Covfefe that one.
Yeah, double much older. You're much, double much older.
Double much older. Nah, come on.
Yeah. So that means you're like, hours and hours ahead of me. So like when we get to Vegas, I'm gonna be like, oh Maddie, it's 5 AM, I gotta go to bed. And you're gonna be like, dude, it's 5 AM, I'm just getting up.
I just woke up. Literally. Okay, so something else that I've like realized about life hacks, right? And productivity. I have like had an epiphany. Like, I've always like woken up early since I've had kids, but I've always been kind of like a person who likes to get up early and like I have energy in the morning so I can get to work, right? But the more I do this, the more I realize I can compact 90% of what I need to do in a day before it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, I know that's crazy to a lot of people who are like, what? But you can do so much if you just set your life up right. Although you pay a high price in other areas of your life. But
yeah, like the rest of your life.
No, that's not true now. Like, come on. Anyways, okay, look. So Vegas. Like we're literally tonight I go to bed and then I have to wake up like mega early. Well, not really. For me, it's right. Like, I'm up. All right, let's go. We've got to get to the airport and then, boom, we're in a plane, dude.
Yeah, I'm getting up. My alarm is set for 3:45 in the morning.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
So, it'll be like right after I go to bed.
Well, then just don't. I mean, like at that point, forget it, dude. Just write it off.
Nah, I don't want to sleep on the plane with you, man. GP Drunk Train was like my personal podcast with Maddie Studios. Oh, yeah. I won't miss another second of that for anything in the world.
Oh, no. It's pretty gas. Even Proxy Guys, like oh,
hey,
yeah.
just think. Yes. I'm really glad we're flying United.
Yeah, we're flying United, no way. hashtag WestJet, the only jet. I only ever fly WestJet. I'm not even sponsored by them, but I think they run the best ship.
You know why they run the best ship?
Why?
Because it's free beer the whole time.
No, there isn't.
On WestJet?
No, you're talking Porter. Porter Airlines is gas.
I wouldn't fly Porter because they wouldn't fly direct.
Actually, you are correct. I think we do get two free booze trucks through.
Yeah,
the
when I went to when I flew to Boston, they're like, "Would you like your complimentary drink?" And we were sitting at the very back of the plane, so we were the last people to get So I got it, but then she like did reverse order, like first in, then last, first pick, last pick. So then I got my beer, and I just pounded it before she had 1 second to turn around. I was like, "I'll take my second one." And she like kind of laughed. Oh, man. She kind of laughed. I was like, "I'm doing you a favor. You don't have to come back here now."
Oh man! You know the one thing I have to say. This announcement week is like got me stressed out because I don't know what's happening, and I hate being stranded in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, I can't even talk to this. So everyone who's physically at Vegas, you're just gonna get the live podcast rants because when stuff happens, I'm like, yo, dude, we have to talk about this right now. Like, so I had to cast this morning. That's why I'm like, wake up, we're casting this. This news, because, by the way, welcome, 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 everyone. This is another episode of your favorite podcast, Hype Club. I am Maddie Studios, as always.
I'm Tony Awesome Sauce, and I'm here to get some hype on day before Vegas, man.
Okay, look, let's just jump into it, because, like, everyone's like, guys, stop rambling garbage. Put that at the end of the episode for the five people that like that.
Done.
Done. No, you know what? You get a little bit at the front, and then you get the back load. That's the way it works.
Wow, that is like...
That does... The back load
does not... That's
exactly
how I want to live my life forever.
A little bit in the front and the rest of the back. Wow. I don't know. Is this a PG show at 8 o'clock in the morning? Anyways.
Hey, someone who knows me will know that that's just true.
Okay. Let's have a conversation.
All right, so E3, what do you think about Wolfenstein? Oh, wait, wrong podcast. Sorry.
E3, horrible. Video games are dying. Anyways, okay.
We'll get to video games later. Trust me, that's on the agenda.
Video games is an entirely separate combo blocked podcast
except for the Magic MMO that's coming up.
Well, we could talk a bit about that.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Metamorphosis. So, Mark Rosewater reveals, and I hate to say this because people hate it, but I called this. I called this so dead on.
Dude,
it's
we
not
called
even
everything
funny.
Every time.
No, we don't. But,
we're basically
but
never
this,
wrong.
This one I called. So they are ending blocks, and we are going to just big sets, and we're actually getting the core set back, which I have to say with most things Wizards does, especially the last 2 years, we have... opinions, and nicely I will put that in air quotes, about some of the stuff they do. This time, I like everything they did. I think this is needed. I think this frees up the ability to have the story run better. I think, and this is just my hot take, but I'll be honest, every single draft I've been to, or every single pre-release where it's the second set, what do you want? I want the new cards. I don't want to open the old set. Like, so this is something that has always bugged me as the casual noob inside me. It's just like, I want the new cards. I don't want the old cards. So I love this from a new player standpoint. I love this from a story standpoint. I love this from a, you know, standard standpoint to some extent, because we're going to get a larger standard. I don't like this for one... Well, we'll talk about this in two stages. Masterpieces are
30 stages. Holy.
Well, the two big ones are masterpieces are no longer every set, which is, I mean, they blew their load, man. Why they were doing 50 masterpieces a block is beyond me. Like, dude, you should have just done 10.
Well, we talked about this on one of the last episodes where the invocations were coming out, and you were in disbelief. I was like, no, Maddie, there's 50 again. And you were like, no, there's no way. That's crazy. I'm like, I know, and they did it.
And to me, like, you could see that was overkill. Like, they not only overkilled it, but people were just, like, burnt out. And this is burnt out three blocks in.
I could have told you from Kaladesh Masterpieces that it was already the beginning of the end. As soon as we started getting... When the Gear Hulks became Masterpieces, it already felt like they were, like, pushing to get that 50 mark, right? Like, it wasn't, hey, we're putting these masterpieces in this set because they're cool and they fit. It was, we have a quota of 50 cards. We need to fill that quota. Yeah. What do we put
now, in? Now, do you want to know something interesting? Because a lot of people are like, well, yeah, why did they? Why was this weird high count, like, such a needed thing? And I understand Battle for Zendikar Expeditions was, like, they're testing it, and sure, there's lands, right? And you need the cycle of lands. So I didn't really think that it was a problem. With the masterpieces from Kaladesh, man, that was a lot. And the reason I just realized this is probably from a print standpoint. They needed a full set.
Yeah, like a full sheet. To fill a sheet. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Because I believe
but actually, I think that might be incorrect because I was at a distributor open house about a month ago, and they had a full foil, uncut sheet of Kaladesh, whatever it has disallow. Kaladesh, yeah. So the reason that this is interesting and I say disallow is because the bottom, it was a foil rare and mythic rare sheet, and the bottom three rows, so 7, 14, 21 cards, were all foil disallows.
Well, there you go.
So what there they do when they can't fill a sheet is they put a filler card on there. Yeah. And this, and ideally, what happens is the filler cards get destroyed. So it doesn't affect the print run.
Sure.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe there's extra foil disallows floating around. But what I'm saying is a mythic and rare sheet isn't a full sheet to begin with. So they do use filler cards already. So telling me that you needed to make a full sheet doesn't feel... It feels like an excuse, not correct, you know? Like, it just feels like an excuse.
I agree that, to me, I've been in print factories. This is what I used to do, man. Like, I would go, I'd be on pre-press when, like, you know, we would do CD album covers and that, and I'd have to be there, and we'd run stuff. And there was all kinds of jack-ups where they would, like, hey, put this one on this sheet to save money, because we... So I understand that there's a lot of flexibility there, but... Maybe in the volume they're doing it, this is why they did it. Anyways, regardless, I think that they shouldn't have done that. I think that if you had a 10 masterpieces a set, that would have been more than enough to get people excited, and I don't think you ever needed to juice it. But, as we know with Wizards of the Coast, they overreact, right? So they have to fix it, so they're like, put 10 times the amount we think should be in there. And that's where we got. So, moving forward, masterpieces are whenever they want to do them, which is good. I think that's fine. A few people have talked about the fact that that means standard is going to get more expensive, which, sure, I guess, right? Because, like, the mythic, you know, whatever the chase mythic is, it's got to eat up the value now, so maybe we'll see more $40 Liliana the, I don't know, Last Hopes?
Dude, Liliana the Last Hopes, $50 still.
Is it 50? No, that's crazy, man.
But, so here's the thing about Lily that you can't really compare it to. She has $20 added on to her, Canadian dollars, so this is only like $2 US. It's not a big deal. it's like 10 double doubles. So the reason that Lily, I think, is artificially inflated is because she has a 3-mana converted mana cost and her name is Liliana.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Like, I think the nostalgia of the Lily tax is like somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% above a real card. Even Gideon is down to like a fairly affordable price for the bar none best card in the set. Standalone card in standard.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, if you took any card from the standard era...
You mean post-Marvel banning? All right.
No, because Marvel on its own doesn't do anything.
Like,
if you said, okay, I want you to take a card and you're not going to build around it, you're just going to put it in your deck, Marvel's not the card. Gideon, you can just put in all your Frontier decks, all your Modern decks, all your Standard decks. I've seen it played in Legacy, in like Dead Gael and Death and Taxes. So
I mean, I'm a huge fan of cards that like I just get it on the board and I have a road to victory. I need nothing else. I can top deck lands for the rest of the game. If I have this card, I can win. So sure. I mean, I don't even own Gideons yet. I was waiting for rotation, but
I mean, still wait for rotation, and you will get them as cheap as possible. But they're still going to be like a $20-$25 card probably.
Oh, wow. I thought they would go lower.
No, they're that good. It's that good.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, the secret's already out, right? Like, everyone knows it's good.
I mean, I still don't see it, like, that often in Modern, and that's the real thing, right? Like, as soon as we see it pop up in a Modern deck, then you're like, ugh.
So here's the thing. You're like, in a bit of a bubble because you only watch coverage or get, like, access to written deck lists after the fact, and I see it on, like, more of a local level, and...
I know it's a blue card, for sure.
700 or 800 people at an SCG open, and we're not going to get to see any decks other than the top 64 or whatever. But like, I know people that have just been like slotting into their Abzan decks, and like I said, I know at least two people in our store locally that are playing them in like their black white X decks in Legacy.
Yeah, for sure. Now let's get back to like these big standard changes because. To me, we've talked about this, right? It's no secret Standard is wailing. It's no secret that the last couple years, they're desperate. Wizards is trying to just throw everything at the wall and see what happens. And it felt like they focused on the experienced player, the established player base, like give them reprints, like, you know, basically juice the stone versus we're going to try to acquire new players. And I think that failed. right? I think that maybe it didn't fail so much as, like, it's epic fail, but I feel like someone sat down and said, I don't think this is worth putting the money into right now. We need to put it back into acquiring new players, keep the grind, right? We talked about the wash before, and I don't think you can replace the wash. You have to have influx of new people. So I think this is partly what's going to happen. Also, Hearthstone, I mean, this is a small thing, but Hearthstone uses single sets kind of thing. So very interesting to see Magic. You know, there's other reasons, but it's also just really neat that they can say, hey, this is the set, or, you know, this is just the set, whatever it is, Ixalan, or not Ixalan, but Milk, whatever, Milk and Archery, right? It's Milk. Hey, everybody loves Milk. You know, we don't have to worry about, you know, cookies coming, right? It's just Milk. So I think that's really interesting, that the marketing and everything around it, the visuals, can all be focused. Now, what's interesting to the Vorthos people out there is storylines, and everyone's worried about it. Like, well, how do you tell a story now, right? I'm so used to the setup and payoff.
Oh my God, like, it's so much easier to tell a story.
It's actually very easy. In fact, it's almost setting up to what we talked about with cartoons, right? It's a season. So now you have a season of Magic Story, which is 4 episodes long. It's going to be the 3 sets and the core set. The way I personally would do it is I would set up the minor storylines in each set, have them resolve, but you set up a larger underlining story, and then you resolve that giant arc in the core set. And why I say the core set is for 2 reasons. 1, core set can do anything it wants. 2, it needs to be juiced some way. So the big whatever, X, insert villain here, or splashy thing, put it in the core set because it's going to help it sell. I also think that if you're going to see masterpieces, I wonder if they would put those in the core set, right?
So I feel like that's like sort of the most likely landing zone for the next time we're going to see them. You know, 12, right? About 12 months from now, you know?
Because here's 2 things that I learned. The invocations are an epic fail, no matter what Wizard says. They totally know that it was not what they wanted, right? So if
dude,
you
there's
look
a,
at...
there's a $21 invocation.
That's nuts. I hear things like that, it hurts my brain. But look, I believe if you're going to do reprints like this, right, like Lightning Bolt or whatever you want, they were even running out of ways, and invocations showed. It's like, well, why don't these are just cool cards? There's no theme of why they go together, but people want them. And
well,
you know,
I mean, there
cool.
was a theme of why they go together, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Kaladesh
was
all artifacts, and the Kaladesh ones were actually super sweet. They like
yeah,
looked
and
cool.
They ran
they
out of
fit
gas.
In exactly, and I think.
Where are we going next?
Exactly.
Ixalan, Underground, Merfolk World. Yay!
It's just
reprint.
Blue cards. Like, it's
yeah,
just,
everything is
it's just
command.
Tridents. It's like just Cryptic Command and Biden of Thassa.
And Merfolk's.
Yeah.
Look, so to me, I feel like
every set they
it,
should just put a modern deck in Masterpieces
oh, yeah.
in the set where it's
deck.
Like, it's Ixalan, now you can get Merfolk, and it's Treeland, and now you can get Elves, and it's Skyland, and you get the Sky cards.
I feel like the storyline's going to be really interesting now. I love, though, huge shout out to them. They're downplaying the Gatewatch. Finally, oh, man. Like,
I feel like
that's
they,
great.
I feel like they just listened to you. They just said, like, what does Maddie think?
I think it wasn't me, man. I think it was a lot of people that were like, I'm bored of this. Stop doing it, right? Like, I feel, I understand, and I think there's a lot of great play here with, like, taking the Gatewatch's characters and using them in intro decks. I think that was really smart, right? Use them in the core set, maybe, but, like, if we go somewhere new, like to Cookies or Milk or whatever we're going, Archery, dude, I don't want to see any of them. Leave those guys on the side. I want new characters. I want a new world. I want a story that isn't about the Gatewatch killing a big thing or a world being destroyed. I want a mystery. I want something weird, you know? Like, hey, Tibalt is looking for a new vest because the other one has got cursed by a demon. I don't know.
Because he what? Dropped his pocket watch.
Yeah, who knows, man? I just want something interesting. So I think this is really cool. The one thing that you know, always pay attention is when Wizards does big changes, they front load. So they're going to front load when we first see it, and they're going to make sure that that's a smash, right? They have to like justify this huge change to stockholders, to their bosses, that, yes, look, sales went up because of this change we did. So expect something crazy when that first set is. And I don't know if it's Ixalan or the set after it. I think Ixalan is the first to follow the new format, right? So we don't get a second set in Ixalan, I believe.
Am I correct? I don't remember because Mark Rosewater's little gif has stupid Milk and Cookies on it.
He doesn't have cookies. Oh, by the way, if you're going, okay, if the setup is milk into the corset, that corset should have been called Choreo. I'm just saying.
Well, I feel like they're just going to take the corset and milk it.
Oh, God. So bad. So bad. It's Fun City, man. Oh, man.
Hey, but, it's now 8:23 in the morning, okay? I'm a functioning human.
Yeah, you got some caffeine and you're good to go, man.
It's true.
Hey,
it's true.
You know the other thing, too, eh? I was thinking, I'm like, does this signal, like, with corsets coming back, the end of master sets?
No.
No? You don't think so?
No, I think there's. I think what they're going to do is they're going to do exactly what you said. They're going to tone it down to like 10 or 12 or like 12 and 13, so 25 a set, half the amount. And I think they're going to do them in one quarter of the set. So instead of getting 200.
Yeah, once a year,
instead of getting
that's better.
100 masterpieces a year over four sets, we're going to get 25 over one set or 20 over one set.
If we had something, like, if they took their, whatever the lull in the market is, right? Like, and that's why I thought it was summer. That's why corsets make sense, right? So, like, this is the lowest selling set on historical average. Juice it with masterpieces once a year. And I think that's really cool, right? Because the corset, this serves so many functions. One, putting masterpieces in a corset is going to drop the price of those cards, which is what you want, right? A new person opens it, they can play it in standard, or they can complete their deck, kind of, with those cards. It sells packs, and it gets you hyped during a lull. So that's very interesting. I just thought, like, look, if a corset's 50-50 reprints, man, it becomes the same issue. We're running out of reprint equity. Right?
I don't think so. And the reason
you don't think so?
No. And the reason that I think the reprints are so important is I'll give you three examples of cards right now that have been reprinted, okay, multiple times, and the price is still completely out of control because Modern is going crazy as a format. Chalice of the Void.
Well, Chalice was reprinted once in original Modern Masters.
And a Masterpiece. So that's two reprints.
Let me just go through them.
And the reason these I'm so adamant about these is because as the format of Modern develops and changes, the cards become more relevant, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, there's the ebb and flow of like what is good and what is not good and what is top tier and what is not top tier. Yeah. But it's the sideboard cards that everyone can play to sort of keep those top tier decks in check that need all these. So Chalice of Void is number one. Number two, Engineered Explosives. Same problem, right? Double reprint plus a masterpiece, and it's just almost $100 for this card.
What?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Chalice of the Void is $95 Canadian for a non-foil modern Masters version. Okay? The third card here, and this is kind of relevant because I just watched somebody open one in a pack, Shadowmoor. Shadowmoor has Devoted Druid in it, okay? That's a $15 common right now because of the new standard. That's not the card I'm talking about, though.
Okay.
Fulminator Mage. Fulminator Mage has reprints. That card's almost $50 again.
Again. Wow.
Again. And these are the cards that will sell core sets, keep Modern accessible, and take artificially inflated prices and keep them to something that's reasonable without tanking the value. Like, Fulminator Mage you'll never be able to get for under $20.
Okay,
Chalice you'll never be able to get for under $25. However, at $25 and available, that's the other thing. Once cards get cheaper, if they're not available, who gives a crap how much they cost? Yeah. It doesn't matter. We talk about this all the time, Maddie. You're like, money's not the issue. And I'm like, dude, these cards don't exist. I can't get them for you.
Yeah, like, good luck trying to find foils of Modern Masters 3 right now. They're so hard to find anything. Oh,
So those three cards are cards that would A, sell a set like mad, B, are
they
healthy.
Would never be printed in there because they're too specific for a corset.
Sunburst? No, I disagree with you. If there's going to be 50% reprints in corsets, that's the position that Wizards can take to keep the rest of the formats healthy.
But, I have to interject, and people are clamoring at their screens. Mark Rosewater said that the corsets are going to be focused on the new player. Not necessarily reprints. You're talking Modern, like a master set reprint level. Like, to me, I think the power level and complexity level of the card determines where it goes over the need to be reprinted. Like, I feel like all those cards you mentioned are way too complicated and specific to go in a core set. I highly, highly doubt we'll ever see them in a core set. If there's a Modern Masters 4, that's where they all belong, right? Maybe master sets need to go yearly. I don't know.
But then we're going to get a master set and it won't be modern. There won't be a Modern Master set every year. It'll be a Master set. So we might see a Modern Master set every 3 years or whatever. Yeah,
right?
That's that's too long. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you took Fulminator Mage, put it in this core set, stuck it at Mythic, it's not going to impact your draft
but
format.
It's such Okay, I get where you're coming from. Like, I if there was no Masters vehicle, yes. This is like the conversation we had 5 years ago before Master sets. We're like, yo, we need these cards in core sets. Like, why wasn't Goyf appearing in a core set? Mark Rosewater answered that exact question. He said, because Goyf is retardedly complex. Like, it doesn't go in a core set because they were trying to have a theme, right? A mechanical theme around a core set. If you want this, like, spaghetti, wide open, any mechanic at all, it's just a bunch of random cards, I don't think that's going to do well, number one, because it's just so confusing. Like, a new player playing in a core set's like, what's Fulminator Mage? Like, what is this card? Why is the art so different than everything else? Like, to me, I
change the art on all of them, for starters. Sure. Every time something's in a core set, you should change the art on it to make sure that it keeps the original feeling like the original and the reprints feeling like reprints. But
I like that.
Here's what I think about this. If a core set comes out, let's say you and I are drafting and you're the new player and I'm the expert because that's how it is in real life.
Savage.
I'm savage today.
Okay.
I know. Just wait till we get to hang out in person, Maddie.
Don't wake Tony up at 7:30 in the morning. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. And he might be asleep. Okay. So if you and I, if there's a core set that has a Fulminator Mage in it,
yeah.
That means you want to play the core set because it's the core set and it's cool and it's been directed to you and you're the one that has the advertisement laser beam shot directly into your eyeballs that you can't avoid. Yeah. I, on the other hand, want to open a Fulminator Mage.
Okay.
Cool. So now we're playing in the same format. And then you open Fulminator Mage and I was like, hey, new player, this is how this works and this is why this is really cool and this is why you should be excited about it. Now have fun. And it sort of bridges this gap between the brand new player and the experienced player, and it puts them in the same format, and it puts them on the same level.
No, and for two reasons. One, they do not, and here's why. They do not want a new player opening that card for two reasons. One, because it immediately directs them out of standard and into modern. What is this card? Where is it played? Here. Two, it's just, they're not going to give up. Like, you nailed it earlier. We have now Eternal Masters, Modern Masters, and Iconic Masters. So we have this like little group of master sets that you're probably right. We probably will go to one of them every year, but it's a rotation of three. And that's where you got to wait for your reprints, right? Because Modern Masters 3 juiced it. I feel like Modern is going to keep growing. It's still the premier format. I know. Crucify me for even saying that, but it is. So
yeah,
there's
the premier
that.
Casual format.
Is it? I don't even know, right?
Modern is the most competitive casual format.
Yeah, competitive casuals are great. I would put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, to me, you have to keep those complex cards for the master set. You know what I do predict is Path to Exile. Super common card, can go on anything, very easy to do. Lightning Bolt, Mana Leak, the standard cards that like we keep seeing. Those cards feel like if they want to play with power level, they throw them in. But again, we've seen
those
them.
Cards are boring, though.
Dude, okay, but that's what core sets are all about, are they not?
That's like, what they used to be about. Is that what they're supposed to be about moving forward?
Okay, let's go to Origins, because I feel like
Origins was its own beast. I think Origins is so different from M15, 14, 13, 12, 11, and 10 that, if anything, if it's more like Origins, then there's more of a chance that they'll just put random crap in it.
Okay, so this is what I want to
talk
about.
And by crap, I mean
on.
Good cards.
Right, exactly. So this is what I want to talk about. I feel like the era of 2015 and back core sets is over. Those will never come back because, number one, I don't think they sold well, and people, I don't know. There's all kinds of issues, and I think they were a fail. Origins was a slam dunk, and you probably are very correct. Origins felt more like a set than it did a core set. It had a unique, splintered flavor. And someone brought this up to me, and they were like, you know what Origins was like? It was an annual in comic books. It was this thing right? And it had all these little stories and little ties so that it kept the story going. So what I would do is I would mimic Origins, not necessarily with flip walkers and stuff, but I would mimic it in the way that I said, I wanted to explore these pillars of decks, right? So, I don't know. Who knows what it would be? But you want to explore these storylines and decks and, like, how the metagame's going to work in the set. And then you set those off. If it means one of them needs to take place in Kamigawa, there you go, man. We have a little subset of cards from Kamigawa. You want the other one to talk about Vryn because we're setting that up? Do that. I think that is the way you use it. And Origins set it up very nicely that we expect a splintered storyline. I think, and that does allow you the greatest opportunity to splash weird stuff, right? Hey, we're back on Lorwyn. Oh, Fulminter Mage. That makes a lot of sense. Now I'm with you.
What about this?
Hold on. There was, because my last point is, in the last several articles that I've read on the Mothership, they talk about how much of a mistake it was that they upped the complexity. So everything we're talking about now, we're experienced players. We're less than 1% of the game. We want this, but is that really what they want? And I have a hard time believing that they want to do something like this, because it does sound, it sounds amazing, by the way, but it sounds extremely complex for a new player.
Okay, so, here are some facts that are bad about that are bad for Wizards. Okay. The last two standard GPs, humble brag for somebody else, that Paul Dean top-8ed both of in standard, were around 800 players.
Yes.
Okay. The most recent modern GP, 2,200 players.
Yeah, I know where you're
going.
So
when you're saying that, yes, we're less than 1%, we hold a massive amount of sway as modern players, because we can prove that if we don't like your game, we won't play it.
Look. You have to throw in your argument there that standard metagame, the bannings and all that stuff, is also a factor. I feel like if standard was healthy, the numbers would be very close.
But
like,
what I'm saying is that if modern gets too expensive and prices people out, people just won't play it until they fix it.
I think that's true. It's super true.
Dude, before Modern Masters 2 came out, before we got the second reprint of Goyfs, I know people that were like, man, Modern looks so awesome, except I can't play it because I can't find the cards that get me even close to the people who have had them for 15 years.
Of course.
Like, you can't just show up.
I was one of those players.
Yeah. Exactly. You can't just show up and be like, hey, I opened this one Jace Rinn's Prodigy in my Magic Origins pre-release, and someone's like, sweet, turn two Goyf that's like a 5/6 or something. Like,
yeah.
And you just, like, there's nothing you can do about it. But what I found, though, as soon as the cards became available for many, many people to buy, not just the elite few, is that that's when brewing started happening, and that's when people started to realize that, okay, if everyone's going to play Goyf, how do we beat Goyf? All right, let's get some spell snares, and then, like, you know, and all of this, more cards is always the answer.
Yeah, well, it's fresh minds, too, right? Like, I hate to say it, but, like, even people like me, Grumpy, all these guys, once I build my deck and I like it, I don't want to change it, because now it's something new to learn. Like, I like brewing, but you're right. There's an expense to collecting a modern deck, and you're hesitant to, like, dude, I dropped a lot of money into this. I really don't want to evolve it, because it means I have to, like, take cards out and put cards in. And so that's where metagames get stale in the more expensive the format goes. I think that's true to some extent. So new players coming in saying, screw it, man, we're going to just try to take down Death Shadow. This is it. You know, we're sick of this card, and we're going to play cards that crush it, like Mirroring Crusader.
This is where this gets really tough, is because the cards that crush it go to $8 quadrillion the second that the deck gets popular. Chalice of the Void, Engineered Explosives. Even if you look at Stubborn Denial, like, if you...
Oh, yeah.
And the thing
$20 foil
now. The thing is... I got mine for $2.
It's
really great. The thing is, if you aren't metagaming to beat the current best deck, then you are just at a strict disadvantage. And it puts you more in the casual column than the competitive column. And if you come to Face to Face Games Toronto on a Thursday night, there's going to be 45 modern players, and 15 of them are going to be playing Devoted Druid combo, and 10 of them are going to be playing a form of Death Shadow. And if you can't beat those two decks, like, you are the X2 player. You're the fodder.
Yeah. Well,
you know, look, like, you're the meat in the water for the sharks, and they're just going to eat you up. And it's not like you don't have the option to get the cards to beat those decks. They're just ridiculously expensive. They're, in fact, so expensive that no one's buying them. So if somebody's like, man, I need some Engineered Explosives to beat Death Shadow, I'm like, yo, I got like 10 copies of them. That'll be $100 each, please. Yeah. And people are like, what? No one's playing this card. It doesn't matter. The card, that's not the card that's being played that makes it expensive. It's all of the other cards that were reprinted that made that card expensive, that made the answer expensive. So yeah, your Jund deck is like pretty good, but Lightning Bolt is an all-time low right now in Modern. Right? Yep. Like, I've seen more people Lightning Bolt themselves than their opponent recently.
Yeah, how crazy is that,
right? That's something, that's absurd. Yeah. I never thought I would say that. But the problem is,
never either.
These super solid answers to these tier one decks that the pros don't really, it feels like they don't really have to be concerned about cost or availability, because as a sponsored player, you just have access to all of these things. And they're the ones that are defining what the expensive not played cards are just by playing their decks. And that's not really the fault of the pro or the player. That's, like, how this system works.
I mean, it's funny because I feel like every time there's a Modern Masters reprint set, we have this exact same conversation. And the conversation goes like this. Wow, these 5 to 10 cards are really cheap. When do we buy them? I don't know, in a couple months when they bought them out. And then our next conversation is, everything is very expensive in Modern. Why is everything so expensive?
The reason it's so expensive is because I think
more people get into the
exactly, and there's not that much of a disconnect between the player who's new, who comes to their first FNM in a really, really great thriving community, makes some friends, and then everyone's like, "Yo, you should play Modern with us," because that's where it's at. So I don't think that I think that Wizards might be like a little jaded on this and saying like, yeah, we got to get the new player in, but it's going to take them a while to get into Modern. I don't think it does. I think the people who get hooked are just instantly hooked and are like, yo, let me borrow your Goyfs and let me play your deck because this looks awesome. I understand Magic. And turning down the complexity too far in a core set will actually alienate the people who fully understand the game.
Look, Toronto is an insular city and everything that we have here is so driven to this hyper-competitiveness, so you can't really look at that as the overall game everywhere else. The other thing you have to consider, too, is that just because a new player is directed towards Standard doesn't mean that that's where they stay, right? So there are people, like, if they like the game and they're looking for value, they quickly leave Standard. Many people realize this, that the wash doesn't last long on everyone. Sometimes you go to a draft and you're like, wow, what is that other format I saw being played? I'm out of here, you know? And they never even hit Standard.
Well, think about it this way, because the funnel, the path that Wizards is trying to put people down is not the path that the players want to carry people down.
Want to be down. Exactly.
Right? So, like, when Wizards puts a new player in my store sitting beside me at the first draft because I love drafting, my then job is to get them to have the most amount of fun and the most amount of, like, opportunity to have fun and play the game. And right now, that's in Modern.
Look, we're pretty clear on our view of formats, that it's an all or nothing game. It's not one format. Wizards needs to, like, grow a pair and be like, look, guys, there's more than one format. I think if they shine the light a little broader, I think as long as people are playing Magic, you're making money. And I think they need to stop worrying about, like, weighting Standard so heavily. And you know what? Maybe we're going to hear from all these announcements that that's exactly what they've come to the conclusion too, right? Who knows? Let's keep moving on the announcements.
One more thing. Because I think we're also going to get a new influx of non-MTG, maybe Hearthstone, maybe Eternal, maybe whatever other of those games
are
online.
And why do you say this?
I think we're going to get a big influx of new players to the MTG card game from non-MTG products, like the MMO, like all the other products. Those are the people that are going to need a less complex standard. So maybe what happens is for the next 2 years, we have a super, like, light, easygoing core set because we're going to have maybe a movie, we haven't heard that, definitely an MMO,
movie's dead.
A bunch of other stuff going on that's going to bring in completely new players again, people who have never played MTG before versus people who have played Duels and people who have played in 93, 94, 95, whatever. And maybe that's what they need to do with the core sets for the next couple of years. And then once this influx of players is in, they switch the focus They switch the focus to, like, a huge master set in 2 years from now to get everyone, like, who is new that they can track and quantify through DCI numbers and, like, info tracking and stuff like that. And then they ratchet it up for that. So I could see that being an announcement that just, like, doesn't ever get said. And in 2 years, we look back and we're like, yo, we nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're going to dump hundreds of millions of dollars into an MMO is you have to have the correlation to what's actually standard is going to look like. Like, that makes sense. Hey, we made an MMO. It's going to be out in a year, in 16 months. So... guys, check it out. And if they're, and I would, you know, bet dollars to dimes, the correlations in cards and planeswalkers and all kinds of like story derivatives, it's all going to connect. Because if you're playing the MMO and you see a character, I don't know, Ralzaric 2.0, and you're like, this guy is great in the MMO. I love him. Oh, wow. He's the new planeswalker of the set.
Or, yeah, what's going on now is 100%. The Ralzaric 2.0 or whatever is already made for a card that comes out in 3 years.
Exactly.
Therefore, yes. The MMO, 100%. when we're getting ready to release Ralzaric 2.0, okay, patch, he's in the game, don't say anything.
Well,
no, because then you're going to be like, what's this crazy thing? And then a month later, patch, he talks. And then that's just like some people
that's
behind
awesome.
It, right?
That's awesome, but I don't, that's not how they do stuff, but I would love
but
more
it's how
subtle
they
hints.
Could do stuff.
They could. Okay, let's
I always
talk,
want
let's...
to give them the option to do the best possible line.
I'm a fan of allowing puzzles to be solved, right? Like, you leave the Easter eggs out, and if people connect the dots, that's great.
But
the internet is way too good at it.
Exactly. You have to make them so vague.
So, yeah.
The 10 million people can't figure them out in 1 minute. Dude, I was talking with somebody about this yesterday, and this is amazing. Do you remember how long it took from Felor a Guardian getting spoiled for the combo to be, like, the only thing that was on the internet?
Yeah, do you want to know what's interesting? Yeah. I started typing in my Twitter the second I saw it instantly, and before I finished, it took me 13 seconds to type out my tweet and hit it, and there was already 8 other people that tweeted it. So,
this is the type of thing that Wizards should use. And lean on.
I agree.
Of like,
of course.
You guys know better than us because we're a small elite crack team who is like lives in our bubble and we try and do everything we can to stay outside of it, but they're in a bubble, right? Like,
yeah, they've got a testing team now. So
a testing team is nothing compared to the amount of people who play online forums that are free. I'm not even talking about people who pay for Moto or have. You know, an account with everything in them from their sponsor or whatever, who cares? But I'm talking, like, oh, man.
There's tons. I agree. Look, the MMO world, if they can create an MMO that draws an audience that's in the tens of thousands, yeah, dude, that's crazy. And who knows? Maybe it goes into, you know, StarCraft level. I don't know.
Again, it's going to be a non-zero number of people who exclusively play the MTGO the MMO and just, like,
and
don't care about playing paper cards. Or maybe even more importantly, play the MMO, try Magic Online, are not satisfied with the experience, and then just exclusively stick to the MMO.
Yeah, but here's the thing you always remember, right? Hearthstone and World of Warcraft, they're connected, but they're not exclusive to each other. So just because someone plays one, tries the other, and doesn't, like, you know, completely enter the ecosystem, it doesn't matter because they're exposed to it. Now they
exactly.
Know it. So if they see a Hearthstone shirt, they may buy it, even though they don't play it hardcore. So
yep.
Magic has this opportunity right now. I love this. I think the MMO is interesting. I personally am not excited for an MMO because, but whatever. It's interesting
I've
that
wanted to play an MMO again for a little while, and I've, like, you know, I played World of Warcraft back in the day, and I'm not committing to paying for one yet, but, like, I recently, like, downloaded and bought Diablo 3 because I saw Scotty Max streaming it recently, and I was like, oh, this is a game that I could get behind, you know, like a point and click for 20 minutes at a time with no commitment. But there's a lot of people who are like me, like, I know Kelly's one of them, that played World of Warcraft when you only went to level 60, and being on the ground floor of something is a certain level of appealing to people who are, like, on the fence.
Yeah. I'm going to say this. You know, a lot of people said, when is Magic going to be a esport? Maybe, and this will be controversial, but maybe they get there.
Oh my God,
MMO
PvP, like Warcraft PvP style.
Right. Maybe that's what they do. And I know that's sacrilege to everyone who's been playing the game because they're like, that's not fair. How did the MMO get in and beat us? But the fact is, it's built for that. Like, it's built to be exciting visually. For my mom to sit there and go, ooh, look at that explosion Jace just cast. Like, that's what I would not be shocked.
Honestly, Maddie, when I started watching streams to satisfy my, like, deep desire to want to play a video game, but I just don't have time, right? Like, I really want to play a video game, I really, like, enjoy them, but I don't have time. And that balance means I don't enjoy them when I play them because I don't feel like I'm relaxing. Anyways, so I started watching a lot of streams. And I'll still watch, like, Warcraft PvP high-end tournaments, even though I have no idea what's going on. Because there's so much more than when I played it. And PvP was always something that was, like, pretty, like, unbelievably amazing with, like, the communication and how hotkeys work and cooldowns and, like, all that stuff was, like, really, really interesting. It's such high-paced and interesting interactive, like, gameplay that isn't Magic at all. But if that was just Jace and Garruk instead of a gnome mage and a tauren whatever, I am so sold it's not even funny.
I know. And now here's, okay, we're, you know what, screw it, we're going off the rails because, like, this is the way our minds work, but, like, if you do this right, and obviously they're not going to let us play as Jace, they're going to let us build our character, you know, Maddie Studios is hype, and that's going to be me, and I get to change my colors and, you know, eventually suit up and get all my stuff.
Earn the Jace hood.
But I believe if you do this smart, what it would be is, like, hey, Jace shows up, and he's like, we're going on a quest, are you coming? And I'm like, oh, you damn right I'm coming.
Hell yeah.
And we pick up Chandra on the way, and now Nicol Bolas shows up to take them out, but I'm here because, you know, wrong place, wrong time. And now I'm fighting. Like, this is how they need to do it. And if they're smart, like you said, if they are real smart, right? They got a new set. It's coming up. They have this huge dungeon siege or something where they're streaming it live. And in that thing, they reveal something, you know? Like, that's what we want. And then everyone who's been playing the MMO, watching it, streaming it, they know this information. They jump on social media. They're like, holy cow, guys, new Planeswalker just showed up and killed Jace. I don't know. Like, that's, and then it's like, whoa, what? This is like where we're going. And to be honest, that's much more preferable to me if Wizards start to spend their, I don't know how to say this, but, like, their standard promotional dollars going there to grow the game versus trying to control bannings and unbannings in Eternal formats. Now, that was a mouthful, but what I'm trying to get at is I'd really love to see the day where they're pumping $1 million a year in advertising spending there, and then they're allowing the Pro Tour to be more about pro and not promotion. You know what I mean? Is that crazy where maybe we can get to a synergy where, like, hey, they're pumping the standard set over here and not necessarily so much at the Pro Tour.
Imagine.
And then maybe that opens up the chance to have a modern Pro Tour again or unique things. I don't know. Down the road.
This would be, like, a really cool level that they could add to it, too, is if they had inherent story behind each of, like, the three main characters instead of the Gatewatch or whatever from the set. Right? Mm-hmm. And then they created a narrative for, let's say, the commentators. And then at the first GP, and not at the promotional tour level right now, but at, like, the GP level, the casters and the people that were involved and the people who make, like, the little cutscene videos and stuff like that for the Pro Tour, they could move that to the GP level, and then the casters would be like, okay, this is the undefeated deck. It's playing the Chandra of the set. Let's talk about Chandra's story. And then if Chandra was the one that sort of, like, made it big and was, like, the breakout card out of whatever the three of them were, then Wizards can turn around and then write a story article about that and start, like, pushing the players down the path of the card that they chose that they want to see more of.
Oh, man. See, don't even, like, you're talking crazy. Like, that's dream time where it's like, hey, community, design the card, or, like,
or choose the story that you want to hear. Because, sure, like, if they just say, like, okay, we're putting the five Planeswalkers in there, they're all freaking amazing, they're all really strong, they're all playable, and then whichever ones sort of, like, float to the top are going to be the ones that the players, like, find the best, like, actual card play with, but there's going to be, like, a lot of people drawn to art and story and history and stuff like that. And then if Chandra is the breakout card, then, like, tell the Chandra story through articles. And that's a thing that you can just be like, oh, well, this GP was won by Jace. Okay, you, writer number one, start finishing your Jace story that you were already starting. You know? If Chandra
there's
was the breakout card, like, okay, article about Chandra that goes up on Monday after the tournament. Get people, like, so hooked on the current narrative of what's going on.
That's, I mean, you're almost describing like creating a live dynamic
breathing
entity where we have control over direction, which is really cool. It's harder to do,
but not even on purpose, right? It's not like a bunch of people are going to play the worst card so that we can have a different story.
it's
just going to be the way that it, like, the way everything kind of falls out. Like, the Magic Origin story is actually a really perfect example because all of those Planeswalkers
they
were really close to all being playable. Right, like like Nissa was playable, Jace was playable.
Chandra was bad.
Liliana is still actually pretty good, right? Chandra didn't quite get there, but then they put the focus on Chandra for Kaladesh right away.
Which was fine.
So they should have just made that Chandra card better.
Yes.
And everything would have sort of made sense.
But
and that would have been
on,
that would have been by accident. Now, but you know, if they designed it that way, then, you know.
But you know what? Looking back, they didn't for a reason because they were going to juice. They were putting Chandra the Mind Sculptor in Kaladesh. So the reason they made her crappier is so that, you know, her new card looked more impressive.
But here's the thing. I don't think that that's the right thing to do with Planeswalkers. You can have three very, very good Planeswalkers with the same name in the same block or, sorry, the same standard format.
I disagree.
No, you totally can. Because if they're all good and all different... For example, Jace the Mind Sculptor and Jace Rin's Prodigy are very, very different cards. You wouldn't play them both in the same deck.
Yeah.
But you can play two different Jace decks.
I agree with that, and that's what they were kind of going for. I just hate that. Like, personally, what I would love to see is if Jace is in standard... Then when that card rotates, I don't want to see Jace for a while. Like, I want to be excited about the walkers, not like, what version did we get this time? And like, Gideon with so many versions, it's crazy. Like, to me that, and I'm not the only one. I think a lot of people were sick of it, and they're like, we'd rather new Planeswalkers, and I understand there's development issues there. But let's move on quick, because we've gone way off the rails. Let's come back, because it is Tuesday. There is another announcement coming today. This is the band announce. Wait, what's happening
today? It's BNR today, yeah.
Okay, so we have BNR and we have a Magic online announcement.
Don't care.
Now, well, I care.
I know.
So
that means I care,
a lot.
By default. But not really.
I will bring you in. Here's the thing that's like, the chatter going on is like really skittish right now for anyone that's interested in what's happening. Obviously, I don't think this is a Magic Digital Next announcement. I think this is more... people are a little worried that maybe they'll announce the end of Redemptions, which would change the game. Like, that is going to change the game. That is either going to put everyone's Magic collections to zero and that's dead, or it's going to make the paper game more expensive because there's no outlet. Like, there's a lot of unknowns, and they've been shortening that Redemption window from 18 months to 6 months now, and man, everything they do is, like, focused on, like, cutting that all out, right? It's the dead cat on the table. Scenario today where if people don't know what that is, that's when, you know, I'm about to tell you some really bad news, but if I throw a dead cat on the table, you're like, what the hell is that doing here? And you're really focused on that, and then you don't hear me telling you the bad news.
Oh, so like American politics.
Well, there's a giant, you know, kerfluffle going on in the world
of
politics.
It's a giant orange dead kefefe on the table.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could totally predict. I mean, it's only 9 o'clock here, so we don't know. This is not pre-recorded after the announcement, so I'm just guessing. But if they said, hey, we're banning Marvel, oh, and by the way, Redemption's dead.
They're not banning Marvel. If anything, it's going to be Ulamog. And here's why. The reason...
We know why.
The reason... Yeah, but does everyone at home know why, Maddie? I'm going to tell them, okay?
Okay. But
you
we
eight people
about this
at home listening, I'm going to tell you why.
just before you get into it... You do know that we're getting a Nicol Bolas. So
yeah.
You're just delaying another problem, but go
disagree.
On.
And this is because every time that I watch Marvel being spun and it didn't hit Ulamog, the card made me want to play it instantly. It looked like so much fun, so exciting, and marveling on your own turn for a 6-mana Planeswalker, yeah, cool, you got a 2-mana ramp spell and you had to play a bunch of energy cards in your deck. Great. Good for you. You're the best. What having a Planeswalker be a hit for Marvel means you can't marvel on your opponent's turn for value. Marveling in combat is not the thing that you want to do. So it actually,
and I don't want to drop. So it, yeah, and I don't want to drop a nickel bolus on my opponent.
Exactly,
turn,
it doesn't do anything, right? It doesn't do anything. Now,
yeah, so it's sorcery
now,
speed.
The second reason for banning Ulamog over Marvel is that Ulamog was not supposed to be in standard with Marvel in the first place.
I'm with you banning Marvel or Ulamog over Marvel. So, I agree. Marvel's an interesting card.
So that's a completely safe outlet for Wizards to not even have a real reason to just say, these weren't supposed to be together, so we're going to try and realign standard as much as possible before the rotation hits. I don't think we're going to go the whole summer with it being the way that it is. I don't think we're going to have Marvel into Ulamog and Nicol Bolas.
So one question would be, did they know, and this, okay, so not only, because we have to look at the past, we know Ulamog's not supposed to be here, but do you believe that they built Nicol Bolas and designed him in a way because they wanted it to be hit off Marvel?
I don't.
Like, that was in their brains when they were designing the sets. It had to have been, right?
Okay, if you Marvel for Ulamog, or for Nicol Bolas on turn four, you've played enough cards to get 6 energy, okay, up until this point, and you get a free Black Lotus out of it, right? Like, you're basically storing up and you get 3 mana ahead. That's not unreasonable. That's, like, a pretty sweet payoff for playing a bunch of arguably bad cards in your deck. Like, who wants to play the third Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot of the game? No one. They're doing it so that they can spin Marvel. So I've had my Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot blown up, which meant I couldn't, you know, spin my Marvel on the turn that I was supposed to. So there are ways that you can interact with this that make it a very bad deck when you're not spinning to Ulamog, right? Because here's the thing.
Oh, if I agree. So, but let's
like
let's
casting Nicol Bolas on turn 7 is the way that it was supposed to be, because it's a 7 mana Planeswalker. Maybe turn 6. Maybe turn 6. I mean, we have Hedron Archive, so let's call it turn 5, you know? But the thing with that is, that's okay. They want the marquee card to be like this big flashy thing of like, oh man, I got to play my Nicol Bolas early and I dome you for 7 and this is cool and everyone's having a good time. Well, the Nicol Bolas player is. It's the turn 4, double vindicate your lands, have a 10-10 indestructible that kills you in 2 turns. Every one of those things is a problem. If Ulamog wasn't indestructible, it would be less of an issue. If it didn't blow up both your lands and couldn't target lands, it wouldn't be that much of an issue. If it didn't kill you in 2 hits no matter what, it would be less of an issue. But all of those things together make it completely unreasonable to be able to cast on turn 4. I do not feel like Nicol Bolas is unreasonable to come out on turn 4.
Okay. Very well said. Now let's agree to not talk about Ulamog right now, because we're all familiar with how...
Yeah, because it's going to get banned in like 3 hours, so...
It might be. It might.
You want to bet on
that? I agree that...
Get ready for Vegas?
I'm on your side, because I think that makes sense. What I was just saying is, I think that they understood when they designed Nicol Bolas that they wanted it as a hit off Marvel, which we've looked at it, right? If you're playing it on their turn after they have attacked you, you're essentially like, okay, end of turn, I flash in my Nicol Bolas. But then... what am I doing?
But yeah, but that's the same thing as playing it on your main phase, right?
Right, exactly. So you're essentially moving that to sorcery speed, which is interesting. I agree with you. When Nicol Bolas comes down, regardless of where you hit it, it's going to be big. It's a big play. Is it Emrakul, you know, level? No. Is it Ulamog level? No. It is below it, but it's still extremely powerful. So this is cool. I like it. I think it's interesting. It's just... if you ban Marvel, you don't need to worry. Like, this is
here's
why
the thing. If you ban
okay,
Marvel,
well,
you ban every energy card too, because they're now unplayable. What's your payoff? Attune with Aether? Play Traverse. What's your payoff? Harness Lightning? Play a real removal spell. Like, there's no payoffs for all of the energy cards. Like, you're not playing energy so that you can play Aether Sphere
Harvester
now. Like,
you got Dark Confidant energy buff.
When's the last time you saw that see play?
Dude, it's in the green and black aggro deck.
Yeah,
the one that didn't win anything
and can't beat, like, anything else. Like,
Pummeler? Hey, Pummeler and Hydra are still legit.
I completely agree with Pummeler. I totally agree that the energy deck will just become Pummeler. And yeah. That's what we need, right? Let's get rid of Marvel and put Infect in standard. That'll make everyone happy.
Now you're... Look, man, look, we've got... Look, there's lots of different things. We've got Insult to Injury. That can still blow you out, too. Like, there's lots of things.
Yeah, but Insult to Injury is six mana and requires a creature.
Sure. Well, you could three an energy pump. Anyways, the point I'm trying to make is this. With Jason banning a modern, and I know everyone's like, where is he going with this?
Listen, I'm already with you.
Yeah. To me, it's like the reason why they won't unban Jace is not because of power level, I believe. I don't even believe it's because they think it's going to ruin the format. I believe they're scared shitless that if they unban it and it goes to $150 and they reban it, people will riot. And I think the same thing in Standard right now is if you ban Marvel, yes, you have banned another card. It's bad. But it is the safest thing to do because then you've removed things from the situation. If you don't ban Marvel and you ban Ulamog, which is also I prefer that route if we go there, mm-hmm. you are rolling the dice that you hope that when you design Nicol Bolas, guys, did we get it right? Because if we screwed up again, it's so bad. Like, it's infinitely worse than just taking the hit now and saying, you know what, Marvel is out, we're done. So I don't know where they're going to go. I just feel like Ulamog shouldn't be here, so that's an easy one. And his price is dropping, so like,
financially, I don't think it's going to hurt.
What?
Yes.
Oh my god. Okay, Magic is way more expensive than I realized. I thought it was $20. I thought
it dropped. No, it's $50, dude.
What? Oh my god. For a foil?
No.
Regular version is $50. Can it Canada bucks?
Yes.
That's
25 double doubles.
Holy cow. Oh, by the way, I have to get Marcel maple syrup. I don't know why I'm mentioning this, but...
They always sell real Canadian maple syrup at the airport, Maddie, so we can...
Are you sure? Because I wanted to get an authentic one.
Well, then...
Is it? I think they do. I think you're right. But I don't know if we have access to that before the gate. We'll have to check. Anyways.
We'll attack them with going... the beaver. They'll understand.
Yeah, exactly, right? Beaver tails. I don't know. Anyways, let's wrap up the first part of the show, and we can get into our post... episode stuff, because everyone loves post
episode stuff. Dude, they're loving it. And the funny part is, all we did was make a longer cast and put a little music in there, and everyone's like, wow, this is so good. Man, if only all Magic players were this easy to satisfy.
Oh my god. That looks like a poster in like a sex worker's shop. I don't know why I said that. Anyways, we're out of here. We'll see you on the other side.
Oh, man.
It's all I know is this. I am like, my nervous energy is now, in 2 hours we find out more information that the cast will be done and edited and I can't put in. And I gotta go and do a million things. This is crazy. It's crazy. But let's talk two things. I heard you're getting a tattoo. Are we talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't... Well, I mean, we can. I'm definitely getting a tattoo. It's Caitlin's birthday. She wants to get a tattoo with me. Like, I'm super into it. So did you get the grenade art for me?
We have it.
I know. I want it. I want like a really clean version that a tattoo artist is going to be like, I can put this on your body.
Holy cow. The tattoo. All right. I think we have that on.
I'm pretty sure we do.
I'll check it out.
Cool. Now, the thing that's cool. We'll get to Vegas. We'll talk about it a lot. I'll show everyone. I don't know where I'm going to get it. Maybe I'll take votes. My face, my butt, my butt face.
A grenade on your butt. There you go. Yeah. Nice. Just a giant grenade.
Yeah, to be like, sorry, I just dropped a bomb.
Oh, hype out. You just walk out of the room.
Yeah, seriously, hype out. No, I mean, the Ultimate Showdown was this Sunday too, which was like a pretty big deal. Like five formats, 40 players, $5,000 in prizes, a trophy that's bigger than most humans. And it was free.
I gotta say, your trophy puts the Pro Tour trophy to shame.
Thank you. I have to give Kelly credit for getting it, but I have to give myself credit for making Kelly get it. I was like, dude.
It's so huge.
I'm like, call them and find out what the largest trophy they have available possible is, and then that's the one that we want. So, funny story about that specific trophy is that exact trophy is the trophy that they would lend out to movies.
No, it wasn't.
The exact trophy. So, I don't know what movies it's been in, but if you see that trophy in a movie, it might be this exact same copy.
Men Without Brooms.
Right?
Oh my god. Yeah. That's hilarious. That is
so hilarious. The cool thing is, we're going to put the winner's name on it for 6 months, as well as the season point leader, because that is actually an accomplishment in itself, is to just, for 6 months, have the most points.
Like
that's pretty huge, right? And the person who earned that this year earned it. Like, they changed their life around. They rearranged their schedule to play more showdowns. They play multi-formats. Like, their goal was to be number one, and they did it. Now, the frustrating part from that is, even though all that work went into getting to this tournament, being number one, having the two buys for the event, their event didn't go so well. So that's magic. You know, like, you have a couple bad draws, there's variance, it all sort of factors in. But that's why I think we should really, like, honor the person who is the season point leader as well as the winner. Those are both pretty huge accomplishments.
No, I think that's a good
but idea. With the trophy, I know you've seen it, it's not totally complete yet, because we're going to have a really nice, like, one-touch case put onto into the middle, and the winner, Andrew Gordon, is going to get to choose whatever card he wants to have in there for the next 6 months.
That's cool.
Yeah, kind of like an invitational, you know. Andrew played like Food that. Chain and Legacy, so I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, an Eternal Scourge or a Mist Hollow Griffin, or honestly, Manipulate Fate is a big one.
That's epic.
You know, man. So dude. That's, in my opinion, really, really cool. Okay, so you just sent me a picture of the Brew Battle Believe. Now, because a lot of those lines are, like, double lines, this thing's going to have to be, like, pretty big. And I don't want to spend, like, $500 on it.
No, dude, you got to remember, right? He's going to have to look at that and, like, sketch out.
So that's the thing. I don't want a sketch of this art. I want this art. And if I can't get this art, then I'll think about something else. Like, I don't want something that looks like the grenade. I want the grenade. That's why I want... I'm willing to commit, like, a large hand-sized portion of it. Like, basically the size that was on the front of the sweater that I made. Like, I'm super willing to commit to that, because I don't want to compromise quality for anything.
Well, you gotta show the guy the tattoo first and see, man.
Yes.
Send it to them before we go. Anyways, like, so by the way, so this is something that I want everybody out there who's listening to remember one thing. I know we always, like, you know, crap talk on a lot of stuff and, like, this sucks, you know, Zack Snyder films are horrible and they're all dark and everything's evil. But it was funny because I took my kids to see Wonder Woman on the weekend.
Yep.
And not only did they sit there the entire time with their jaw on the floor, but, like, they're like, whoa, when Wonder Woman, like, just, like, literally jumps into a building and takes a building out, they're, like, on the edge of their seats. They're like, yeah. And they're like, hey, they're like, did you see that? Like, they were so amped that they came home and they were running around the backyard, like, kicking water cans over, like, they're like, I'm Wonder Woman, check this out, wham! And they're just, like, jumping through sprinklers. Like, the hairs on my arms were standing up. I got chills because I was like, I remember seeing, like, Christopher Reeve in Superman 2. Like, I remember going home and ripping my shirts open, like, thinking, you know, and then jumping off the front porch, right? Like, that was a thing we did, you know, like. And I was like, man, you cannot forget the power of, like, I don't know if it's
a child's mind.
The imagination level of seeing that stuff is so crucial, man. So, like, if you're eventually going to have kids or have young kids, man, expose them to all this stuff, because the confidence level, like, the connections in the brain, like, it's amazing. And you know what? As an old man Logan, I just sit here and I'm like, oh, yeah, I watch this all day long. This is, let's go get another thing and smash it, too, you know?
Yeah.
Let's get some rope. Like, we're buying rope, yellow rope. When I get back, we're going to build lassos. They're like, what? You know, I'm like, you damn right we are.
Nice. Nice.
Oh my god, yeah, it was crazy. The one thing though that I will never ever do again is I got tickets And I don't know why. Someone explained to me why theater owners like continue to just only offer 3D, and then they have one shitty small theater in the back that they show in non-3D, and it's always sold out. And I even bought tickets early, but we got there a little late, and I had to sit in the front row.
That sucks, dude.
Oh my god. My neck is still wrecked.
Yeah.
Like, I was
sitting there. I don't go to movies if I have to sit there, because they're not cheap, and they're not short. Right? Movies are getting longer and longer and more expensive, yeah. And if I'm not comfortable, I'm not going.
I'll say this, man. It's disappointing as, like, when you... A movie is not like, hey, let's go to a movie. It's like, let's drop $200. Like, when you have a family and they, you know, popcorn was $80. What?
Yep.
To get people some snacks costs $80. So, like, everything was to the point where I was like, man, we should cancel this. But I'm like, you can't, right? They're kids. I can't say, screw this, guys. We're going to wait.
Sorry, kids. Showing. You're not worth it.
Yeah, no. So I was like, all right, whatever. I was like, we'll do it. But I just wish theater owners would be like, because here's what's so crazy, eh? We go and there's, like, Wonder Woman playing in, like, AVX, Super 3D, whatever. Huge. The biggest theater. It's theater number one. And there's four people in it. And it seats, like, 300. What? And then the small theater that seats 100 people is packed to the tits. Like, come on, man. Like, I will pay more. Like, I'm already paying so goddamn much to go to a movie. I'm like, charge me another $10 to not watch it in 3D. Like, can I just sit in a big theater with nice sound and a big screen? That's all I want.
Apparently not.
Like, yeah, it's just crazy. It's again, it's like magic. And the reason I brought the story up is like magic. And I know TSG kind of felt like this. Magic is not for everyone. And it's not necessarily that it's for everyone. It's that the current direction focuses on a certain demographic and target. It's just like movies, right? Like, they're focusing on people who are uneducated at the movie experience, and they just want to charge you the most amount of money. And any way they can do that, they're due. So they don't care about your actual movie-going experience. They don't care that you're going to come back. They're like, hey, you when you want to see a movie, and it's hot outside, and, you know, it's summertime, you're going to come in and watch a movie. And if all we have is playing is 3D, you're going to watch your miserable experience and pay $8 more for it. So it's just so silly that they could, like magic, you could just offer people a higher quality, better experience, and they would love it more, instead of creating this, like, bitter feedback loop where you constantly feel like you've been taken advantage of. You know, it's something I've noticed, and it's just like, man, I will support, like, brands and companies and, like, offerings out there that, like, give me that value. And then once I do, man, I am so loyal, you know, and it feels like companies have forgotten that, you know, like, you can make a lot of money, you can focus, like, a really good product and deliver great value and create good customers. Like, I feel like that's just completely been lost. In so many aspects of our lives.
Okay,
Hashtag coffee time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no shit. So, check this out. When I lived in Ottawa, one of my roommates, Marcus, he used to run a movie theater. And an old-style movie theater that, like, ran double projectors, two reels. Like, he was Tyler Durden, like, switching things over.
Splicing in.
Yeah,
splicing
right?
in a little shot.
Exactly. So, what Marcus used to do for me is... he would either cut a frame out of a movie that he knew I loved, and then, like, for my birthday or Christmas or whatever, get me the DVD with a frame from the actual movie, like, taped inside of it.
That's actually dope.
That's really sick, right? But what he did one time is, after the theater was closed, we all went there, and there was, like, six or eight of us, and we hooked up our Wii and played Mario Kart Racing.
Okay.
On the theater. So, not only did we do that, which was really fun, but then... we started playing Rock Band and Guitar Hero in, like, a 350-person movie theater with eight of us. Like, a case of beer, two people, one standing in each aisle, Guitar Hero dueling at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I will just say this. When Famous Players launched in, like, I think it was, like, early 2000s, the huge theaters, they put one down at Richmond and John, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
The Paramount one?
Yep.
So I'd gotten tickets because they decided to do a Tekken Tag Tournament thing where they'd let you play video games on the big screen.
Yeah.
This is way back. This is when they first did it,
like,
right?
Like PS2 Tekken, 2. Yeah.
Yeah, PS2 launched, I think it was with. So I got, because, you know, we were goofing around with our Fly Life TV show and stuff, and we were always jumping in and out and, like, just doing goofball things. So we got invited to the press release, and we got there late. And so they were closing down, and we got in, and they were like, ah, yeah, whatever. And everyone really left. Like, it was the guys that were operating the system, right? They hired this company to come in and set it up. So we started talking to them, and the one guy was, like, a huge tag player, right? And so I was like, dude, I play Nina and Anna, and I will crush you. And I was, like, totally shit-talking him. And he's like, what? And he's like, fine, you know what? Let's do this. We started, like, going at it hardcore. And it was, like, an hour and a half. No one came to shut us down, right? So we're just playing, going crazy. And to this day, I have never experienced anything like that because it's surround sound. It was full, like, movie theater sound.
Yeah.
It was and it was so amazing. I was blown away. And imagine how good it would be now with good video game graphics.
Well, right? I mean, like, think about playing Rock Band. It's like it was actually like you were on a stage playing this song because of this, like, the 80,000 speaker surround sound, right? At like, you know, the wow, like, turn it up to 11 type thing.
Oh no, I think that would be even more epic.
It was pretty amazing. And, like, the, you know, a case of beer and a good video game with some friends is, like, already a good time. But, you know, put it on like a 65-foot screen or whatever, and how do you lose?
You don't.
Yeah.
That's just the thing. I mean, it's so funny because experiences are everything, right? Like, Vegas, it's all going to be about, like, let's get the experiences in, man. Oh,
that's it.
I'm just so excited. I know everybody's like, stop talking about it. Just go do your thing. But for all the people that are not coming, man, try to live vicarious through us on Twitter. We'll try to tweet some stuff. I have a data plan in the States for the first time ever, so.
Yeah, I'm also going to have a data plan, so you can you can text me. But speaking of going to the States and making memories and experiences, we get to meet Colin.
Oh, yeah. Tell me more about this, because I watched your little...
What'd you think?
So what was this?
Okay, so...
Well, I watched this YouTube... the guys are doing, like, a little, like, what, sitcom show?
Yeah, like a little 10-minute, like, comedy sketch thing. And it's called The Mirrodin Project. We'll put the links in the show description. Everyone should watch it.
It was pretty funny.
Everything about this video is me as a Magic player. Right? The person...
I just love the
description of
team.
The deck... Is
that was funny.
Dude, and then he pulls out Next Level Deck Building and starts reading it.
Yeah.
Like, everything like, about it was just on point. So, the way that I met Colin was Colin approached me to be on his podcast, Mox Team Zirconia, when Frontier was kind of blowing up, and they're a standard brewcast. And they got a bunch of requests to do, like, some Frontier brewing. So I've been on their podcast a couple times. So, I promised Colin, you know, we'd share this around, but I promised him that before I watched it. Because, you know, friends are friends, and I'll help him out. But I legitimately think this video is, like, 15 out of 10 gold. It's so on point that everything that they do moving forward can, like, only be better. I think the writing was on point. I thought, like, the specific amateur acting was, like, super on point. Colin's facial expressions, like, oh my god, I can't describe how many times I just laughed at this. Because I'm like, this is me. This is my magic experience of life.
Yeah, no, he definitely is you with the bruise, man. That was pretty funny. I just love, he's like, well, get in there, man. He's like, why aren't you coming?
I'm banned.
I'm serving a suspension for something. I was just like, what? So, like, yes.
I'm so embarrassed right now. Why? Because I'm 3-0.
Yeah. Because it's the bruise like that are just gas. That is a great show. Again, anybody making, like, anyone taking the time to make really good content for this community, I mean, we'll support you. Like, that's just awesome. I love it.
Yeah, so we get to meet Colin. He lives in Seattle, but he's going to come down to Vegas. We're going to hang out, and he'll be a part of our... He's now, you know, an expanded member of the Heavy Meta SV universe.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited.
So this is going to be really cool. We'll get to meet some new people, and yeah. Maybe you guys can talk about, you know, filming projects and stuff. I know you got some history in that.
Oh, sure,
so.
Man.
Yeah,
I love this. I just love meeting new people. It's just good times, man. So we are going to be having fun all week. We're going to miss all the amazing announcements, but
no,
you know
not.
What's going to be?
We're going to be at the announcements.
Well, we can't podcast about them. But what's going to be
live
awesome
tweet?
So I've heard we're getting exclusive spoilers on site.
We sure are.
We have to, so day one, we got to get there and like figure out what's going down.
Okay,
man,
so,
dude, we haven't even registered for Modern Side Events or Frontier Side
Events.
Dude,
you don't
which,
register
way,
for side events.
No, you want to jump in? Well, whatever. You're the master at that. I will be your Padawan. Just point me in the direction I need to go. But you have to help me on the plane. I couldn't figure out if I'm playing Jund or Grixis, so I have the Jund Grixis box. It's just a pile of cards. Because I don't know. I don't know what to do, man. I was like,
To be perfectly honest, Maddie, like, I don't know if I'm going to play any Modern this weekend.
Tell me now, because I was like, do I even bring this?
Because
I do want to play.
And we might, and I'm going to bring my Scapeshift deck, but playing Scapeshift is actually not playing Modern. It's like, don't do anything, try and win. Like, it's not like an interactive game. And I'm personally not very satisfied with the gameplay of where Modern's at right now. Like, I'm not into trying to beat one mana 8/8s. And, like, I think the Death Shadow deck is really good. I don't enjoy playing against it.
Wow.
So,
okay.
For me, my personal enjoyment is more important than winning.
Which is why
Frontier's my jam. And I don't believe that the people who are going to Las Vegas and playing Modern all weekend, like waiting for Modern's the first event, right? Yeah, Modern's the first event. Yeah. So like maybe we want to play Modern while the Modern GP is going on, and we can sort of slot into the not mono Death Shadow decks. And the reason that I'm so convinced that this is going to be the way it is because when I went to Detroit and I played the side events, the best deck was Death Shadow at the time, but it was Jund. And I played one side event and I played it 4 times in a row. And I was just but that's just proves how good the deck is. So, I'm going to bring 6 Frontier decks that are built and ready to shuffle and play.
Oh, nice.
Okay, all different spectrums, all different everything. And I'm going to bring my 2 Modern decks. I have Scapeshift and I have Fairies.
Right. Well, we can even jam games.
Exactly, we can do whatever we want. But the reason that I like Fairies currently is because Spellstutter Sprite owns Death Shadow.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like a super distinct metagame call, and if I don't play against Death Shadow, Fairies is a very bad deck.
I almost won a last minute. You know what? I was thinking about this, and I'm like, okay, I agree with you that we're going to see a ton of like the most popular deck. So I was like, do I just bring like Thrun the Last Troll,
yes.
Mirian Crusader,
yes.
Loxodon Smiter? Do I literally build evil death, like discard hate little kid? And it's just like, so you go to discard me? Oh, well, I guess I get Obstinate Baeloth for free.
Dude, there's a
like,
reason I'm playing Scapeshift, and it's because 4 Obstinate Baeloths are in the sideboard, and they're good against burn, and they're good against discard.
Because I was thinking, like, imagine, how do they beat Mirian Crusader and, like, Thrun? You can't beat that.
Well, I mean, the...
You can't Stubborn Denial Thrun. Like, it reminds me of when I was, why I played Green Machine, when, you know, certain decks were trying to, like... shut me down. I'm like, well, Thrun can't be countered, and you can't really kill it.
Speaking of which, I should actually have a Thrun in my sideboard of Scapeshift.
Oh, actually, you know what? I gotta find my Thrun. It's in my Green Machine deck now. Actually, maybe I should just bring Green Machine to smash people's face. There's so many options.
Green Machine can't compete with Death Shadow. On turn two, you're gonna play a 2/1 with haste, and on turn two, they're gonna play an 8/8.
Yeah, I trust me. I looked at it. It's officially retired. You can't. We don't have the tools. We just don't have the tools. Yeah.
Well, there's just better things going on that are over multiple colors. Like, you can play a turn 2/4/5, and your opponent can cast Collected Company and do infinite damage to you.
I just feel like, is there a card like, what is the ley line? The red ley line? Ley line of punishment? Is there a way we can get that down so that, like, the damage they take is doubled? Or can we, like, trick them into killing themselves? That's what I'm wondering, like, with Death Shadow. Because they do half the job for you.
I mean, if you want, like, it might be worth it to consider, like, a red-white Simeon Spirit Guide, Blood Moon, 4-Bolt, 4-Helix type deck.
The only other deck that I really thought had gas was I was going to play a Breach deck. So just play, like, Counter Breach, which is basically all blue except for Through the Breach and Emrakul. And I just try to counter and kill everything, and then just.
So
like,
I've seen this deck played around at the opens, and it's had some like good results, but it's still like the problem is it's so slow compared to Death Shadow that you'll just never win. For example,
I know
you're trying to cast Through the Breach with counterspell backup, and they have 1 mana negates after turn 2.
Yeah,
so you're looking at like
7, sucks.
8 mana before you can resolve a Through the Breach, and you're just dead.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. Trust me.
And not only
this,
if you can beat the Death Shadow deck, you're going to get destroyed by the Devoted Druid deck.
Yeah.
And those are the two decks that everyone's going to play this weekend because they are far and away...
They're
far and away the best decks, not close.
Devoted Druid, you know what? Strangely enough, I was looking at this new green-white humans list like that's just like throwing that in for free.
Yeah.
And that looked insanely good, man. Woof. I think it was Caleb Durer that was working on it.
Like maybe the brew is you just put Mirren Crusader into that current deck.
Oh, it is.
Right?
It is. But you're playing four... This weekend, if you're not playing four Mirren Crusader, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, so...
And actually, what's the red, pro-red, pro-black, pro-black, pro-red?
Phyrexian Crusader.
No. The human white gets a life, gains a life when a creature enters the battlefield.
Oh.
Auroch Champion?
Yeah.
It's not Auroch.
It is Auroch Champion, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Ah, memory serves me well. No, that card, there's definitely a white deck in there that has gas against them. It's just, again, you're going to lose to the combo. I don't know how you...
Maybe the deck for the weekend is like a mono-white Death and Taxes, where you get to play main deck Condemn.
Ooh, yeah.
And then you play Mirren Crusader, and then you have all of your other things, like Eldrazi Displacer does a really good job of holding back Death Shadow. Yep. So maybe the deck for the weekend is mono-white Taxes.
You know what, folks? I love everyone at home. We're like, literally need to do a million things right now. I don't have time to rebuild a deck, dude. You know what? I think you're right. My Frontier deck is good. I'm happy. I want to play it. I just need a couple cards. I'll probably buy them on site. But yeah, we're Frontier all the way, man. If we have some modern fun, we'll have it. But
okay,
I think you're right.
So I obviously want to talk to you forever, but I won't keep you too infinitely long because I know you got to do stuff. But did you see the new Frontier cat combo?
There's a new cat combo?
Yes.
What?
Okay, there's a card called Flame Shadow Conjuring from Magic Origins. Okay?
Oh, yes, the red one that creates a copy, right?
Sure does.
When it attacks?
No, when a creature enters the battlefield, you can pay a red. If you do, you make a copy of that creature. So the way this works is you have a Flame Shadow Conjuring in play. It's a 4-man enchantment. You cast Felidar Guardian. You get two triggers that you get to stack. Your first trigger is the Felidar Guardian. The first trigger to resolve is the Felidar Guardian, which untaps your red land. And the second trigger, you get to then tap your red land to make a copy of the Felidar Guardian. Now, the copy blinks the original. Rinse, repeat.
No.
Yeah.
No. Is this Splinter Twin?
So here...
Did we just make Splinter Cat?
So here's the positives and the negatives of it.
All right.
Positive, it's... It's much harder to interact with than Saheeli.
Yeah, you can't get shocked.
Can't get K-commanded, like, can't, all that stuff.
Thing is, they totally see it, they won't see it coming, right?
Correct.
You're like, what?
Correct. You're going to go Flame Shadow Conjuring, and your opponent's going to be like, you're a noob, Siege Rhino, and you're going to go, untap, kill you.
I don't even know what this... I think this card is like two dragon heads, right? Or snake heads or something?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta find it.
So anyways, I have the list right here that I'm building that I'm going to show you. I'll send it over to you because it's really good. I'll put it in the show notes.
Sweet!
So, there you go. So, the reason this is cool is because this gives us... When you look at the build, this gives us four ways to infinite combo with Cat that aren't Saheeli. Or sorry, three other ways that aren't Saheeli. So we have... Cat plus Impact Tremors is win, right?
I love it.
We have Cat plus Altar of the Brood is win. We have Cat plus Flame Shadow Conjuring is win. And we have Cat plus Saheeli is a win.
I'm really excited right now.
So, here's where the deck gets really, really strong. Are you looking at it?
I am.
Okay, here's where the deck gets really strong. Imagine you don't have your Felidar Guardian on turn 4, but you have enough to go Reflector Mage copy it.
Okay.
Or with Flame Shadow Conjuring, you just get free Reflector Mages. Or Torrential Gearhulk on 7 mana to dig through time and then counter their spell with your copy. You know, like being able to copy a Reflector Mage or a Torrential Gearhulk as sort of your misses, potentially, seems very, very, very strong.
Alright, this is...
So this is the list I'm going to build, and this is going to be my combo deck.
Alright. I am down.
I have an Atarka red deck that Matt Mealing played at the Ultimate Showdown that's really strong that we're gonna have. I have a Marvel deck that just gets to Marvel Emrakul on turn 4, and if you miss Emrakul, you probably hit an Ugin. That's pretty fun. And I have I had a Saheeli deck, but now it's becoming this. So
dude, I love it.
So this is something that I'm very, very interested in playing.
This is good. I want to play this too now. This is that
it's kind of like Thundercats, only we're just not calling them.
I know, right? Dude, I love it. Oh, all right. Well, you know what, folks? We're out of here because this is just too much, man. This is too much.
Oh man!
You'll
all
see
right,
us. You'll see us on the Intertweebs, the Tweeber Inn,
or you'll see us in Vegas.
Yeah, maybe you're in Vegas. So hey, come say hi. We're around. Tweet us. Tell us where the food and the cube is.
Yeah, right. All right, to Proxy all Guy right, and all the other people that we know are going. We'll see you soon.
All right, later, buddy. We are out.